Ask away, man.
All right. Sure. When did you start baking?
I originally started baking for fun around 1989, while I was going to attending Stony Brook University out in Long Island, as a way of wooing a woman, and it was kind of interesting. It was kind of weird. I don't know about baking a loaf of bread for someone, but I started baking in part because I had recently returned from my very first trip from Italy in 86, and I kind of had these sort of impressions of bread in my head. And while I wasn't kind of, I didn't start baking when I came back from Italy, I kind of had a sense of what a good loaf of bread was from having been in Rome. And that would have been 86, the summer of 86. And so when I started baking, that was kind of the object I was going after, this sort of Roman, rustic, ancient type bread.
And did that have something to do with your background in art?
Well, the trip to Italy was a school-sponsored trip to study art as well as language. And I had a language requirement because I was going to a state university, and it just seemed like a natural to study Italian because that's where all the art is, you know, all the world's art treasures.
And your background isn't it? You're not Italian?
No, anymore. No, Irish. The name Leahy is an Irish name. Yeah. So, it was kind of it was a great experience. Uh-huh. I felt a sort of a kindred feeling with James Joyce and other Irish people who were like wooed by Italy, were won over. Uh-huh. H. Lawrence and James Joyce. That would be my,
The exiles from Ireland.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And your starter started in Tuscany with Cavallo Nero.
Yeah, I actually have the original starter here. Uh-huh. I just refreshed it, and I'm going to basically reintroduce it back into our. Because the starters kind of go bad every so often.
Sure.
They don't go bad, but they kind of get some commercial use. They become their own thing.
Yeah.
It's still a rotten piece of dough.
Right.
But it's just good every so often to kind of refresh it.
And has it changed since it came from Italy? Is it a different animal now?
I think it's... initially, it had a more almost sulfuric smell. Uh-huh. And now it's smelling more like acetic acid. Or uh-huh. It's it's not as sulfur-like as it was initially.
Right. Yeah, because I had gotten some sourdough from a guy in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got it, I said, wow, this is like the weirdest looking stuff. It's like yellow looking flour. I said, bizarre. So I threw it in and mixed it up with some water, added some American flour to it, and it was like kicking. But then I started really being bad, and I mixed it with my other starter and just said, to hell with it, I can't keep it pure, I'm just going to go.
Oh, it was a starter that was yellow?
Yeah, well, the flour was
Durum wheat is yellow.
Yeah, so I don't know if it was Durum that he had, but
it was a Durum.
Could be.
A wheat with yellow.
Because they have problems with their flour in Australia. It has a real, doesn't have that strength that we have.
It
like
probably is the water.
Yeah, could be.
Water, I think, and also the conventions behind mixing that we've kind of all embraced, especially the artisan bread movement, unfortunately, which is, I think, lost right now because it's really more about an appearance or a look rather than a specific process. And I think that's part of my mission is to establish a standard for artisan baking. At least for this, you could say this prima pane, or first loaf, this style of baking that I'm, I guess, known for and imitated, which is basically an imitation of baking forms that I had encountered when I was in Italy, which are basically imitations of these even older baking forms that existed, you know, I think from Roman times and probably
The Greeks.
The Greeks and the Egyptians. But, you know, we're still kind of in love with convention. And most bakeries that make artisan bread, I think it's just weird. It's very interesting. There's so many ways to make good bread, too. It's not to say that, I'm not saying that, you know, using a machine-intensive bread baking is bad. I think it's valid. It's the way of the world. But, you know, I think you know, bread is has as much value, has a sort of a comparable value to toilet paper to most people. And I don't think that that's going to change unless we change the way we look at the actual food itself. Part of the reason for the no-knead baking thing was to kind of bring good bread back home so that people had could reappreciate something that they thought was really complex and obtrusive.
Right. Well, I'm a home baker, and I tried your no-knead bread, and I was a little critical, and then I had an interview with Anthony Bourdain, and he kind of said, man, you got to open your mind to everything and just accept whatever, and, you know, sift out what you like and what you don't.
Yeah, it's all valid.
And then I thought about it, the no knead, and I was thinking, how did you come up with that idea, or was it something that you'd already seen, or is it something that's always been around?
Well, it's a conclusion that I was asked to make bread by a chef named Cesare Casella for a dinner that he was hosting at the Beard House on the foods of ancient Rome, based on the cookbook of Apicius. And the menu was basically Apicius inspired, and he said, make me bread like Roman bread. And I'm thinking, spelt. I'm thinking whole wheat. I'm thinking of those loaves of bread that were preserved in ash during volcanic eruptions in Pompeii. There are photographs of those loaves of bread. And actually, they actually had crumb. They had, structure similar to what we are making now. And it kind of makes sense that that was, you know, the loaf of bread that people ate. It was like this slab, and a kind of slab of rotting flour paste, which is basically what dough is.
Yeah.
You know. The fact that we look at it as something that's been manipulated mechanically and articulated into this elastic, viscoelastic blob that, you know, like clockwork, rises at a certain time frame, usually by a proofing box or some form of external heat, is again more a modern conception of what bread baking is like, or a modern adaptation to recreate a simulacra of the old bread.
Right.
But it's not the old bread. And I felt that in the artisan baking community, we have people that make 35, 40 different types of breads, 15, 20 types of doughs, four or five different types of starters, and I'm like, this is crazy. You know, they kind of lost sight of what an artisan bakery is supposed to be, and to a certain degree, don't have a standard. I mean, hell, Wendy's has artisan ciabatta that they sell their chicken sandwich on, or A Bon Pain, or La Brea Bakery. All these bakeries are artisan. What does the word mean, you know? And, you know, we're not looking at the wheat anymore. We're not the quality or the integrity of the wheat. And we're not standardizing a process. And until we actually have a standard process, a standard system or way, bread baking will remain in this sort of, I don't want to say like dark ages, or it will remain in this sort of, it will remain stuck. It won't, I don't want to say that bread baking can evolve. Bread baking can evolve by kind of going back to its original goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And it can evolve and become an important part of our diet again when we can actually see understand it and see it for what it is. I mean, it's an important part of our diet. To answer the question, how I came to this conclusion that the no-need method was the original method, was that mechanical kneading was discovered later, and it was discovered as a way of reducing the actual time that dough would have normally had to go through, or the pace of flour and water would have had to undergo in order to become dough.
Mm-hmm.
It was a way of reducing the time through machines. And it's a modern conception. The ancient Romans would never have been able to conquer the known world, the far reaches of the known world, if they had to knead dough. Because the labor involved in sowing, harvesting, cleaning, and milling was so extreme that there's no way that they would have been able to prosper. And it also goes without saying that probably some type of gruel or paste was made first, presumably maybe in ancient Egypt, because most known genetic grain varieties originate in Egypt, mm-hmm. in the Abyssinian plain, yeah. actually Ethiopia. And I think there's more, that's the gen center for wheat, and that's where all wheat varieties originated. And gen center, you know the concept, right?
No, I don't.
A gen center is like if you were to travel throughout England,
uh-huh.
and you wanted to know where the largest number of diversely spoken varieties of English were. You're going to find like 20, in a cluster of 20 towns, you'll have 20 different dialects. It's presumed...
Like Elmhurst.
Yeah. It's presumed that that's where the language originated,
yeah.
the style that we speak,
sure.
Because of the variety. And in wheat, there are more varieties and more diversity of varieties in the Abyssinian highlands. At the origin of the Nile River, basically. It's kind of interesting. And so, you know, I came to that conclusion also looking at friezes of Egyptian friezes of bread making. You know, it was basically, you know, gunk in a trowel, you know, with a hoe.
Yeah.
You know, people were kneading dough with their feet,
sure.
not with their hands. It's, you know, the actual act of making bread must have been a very, very simple thing. Everyone knew how to do it. It was commonplace. It was ubiquitous, much like toilet paper and bread is today, but not the bread itself, the actual knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It's also not a very intellectual, wasn't a very intellectual thing. It was also one of these things that, unfortunately, for better or for worse, was imbued with an enormous amount of kind of weird mysticism. There was a cult in ancient Egypt called Ulysses, which resembles in almost every form the cult of Jesus Christ, in as much as it relates to the sacrament of the Eucharist, the bread and the wine, both of which the Romans embraced and I think kind of conferred to the church ritual, which is very kind of Roman. You know, very pagan. You know, I mean, look at the way churches are, and the way they look, and the way they're adorned. Early Christians were a bunch of kind of hippie radicals, probably. Give the land to the poor, blow yourself up in
socialist
public places. Yeah, whatever. I mean, they're probably pretty much like we're probably viewed by the Roman Empire much like we view Islamic fundamentalists
terrorists.
Today. Well, probably.
Yeah.
They're probably. That's not to say that, I'm not saying that what early Christians did was in any way, shape, or form like what
people are doing
today. Yeah.
Although you could say...
Well, a little different.
Probably, yeah.
Here's an analogy.
Well, we have more mechanical tools to do it.
Here's the analogy I had. I was thinking about the plight of the Holocaust, and I was thinking, what would the outcome of the war had been had the Jews in Germany decided that rather than lie down and accept this, that they would go into public places in Germany and blow themselves up.
Yeah.
That they would have been viewed a lot differently. They probably would have been dealt with more brutally than they... But, you know, again, the nature of their culture was not one towards violence.
Yeah.
You know, at least in the culture that had formed in European Judaism.
Oh.
They weren't a violent
yeah.
group. However, ancient Jews from the Bible, were a warring lot.
Yeah.
You know, it was all about murder. It was all about killing, you know. So, you know, everything changes.
Yeah.
You know, you get settled into your ways, you get comfortable, you get the house, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
2.6 children, you know. You know, you have no reason. We have no reason in this country really to fight. We have a completely voluntary. Well, what the fuck is this conversation about? This has nothing to
about
do with
the army.
Right.
I was in the army.
All right. So, were you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
3 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So anyway, going back to the original question.
No kneading.
So he asked me to make some bread for this event, and I put on my thinking cap to think how the Romans would have made the bread. I had made baking experiments many years prior to making bread in places where the water sucked. I can just name a couple places where the water really sucks.
Southern Queens.
Well, no, the water in New York is all the same. It's all sweet water.
Yeah, but they said that the water is being contaminated in Southern Queens.
Well, that's different, though.
Yeah.
That's probably benzene and all
yeah.
sorts of chemicals and stuff. But I'm talking about like where water is very hard, where there's a lot of mineral content.
Right.
Usually the worst bread is made where... usually in Italy, the best bread is made where the water is the worst.
Uh-huh.
So there's a role that water plays. Hard water will make easier bread because you don't have to knead it.
Yeah, my sister lives in Switzerland and she... has a wheat allergy, so she uses like spelt and all the
yeah.
really ancient kind of grains. And I swear I never can bake there. It's so hard to bake for me. I don't know if it's
yeah,
the
well,
water. I think the water is also hard there too.
Yeah, but you can if you use the no knead method.
Yeah.
You can bake anywhere in the world.
Oh, okay.
You can bake. That's the nice thing about it, and that's also part of the reason why the Romans were so successful.
Because
you know the water, well, water would not be the same in Scotland as it would be in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't be the same in the Middle East.
Sure.
But the water changed. Yet at the same time, this humble loaf of bread...
stayed the same.
Was distributed throughout most of the Mediterranean.
Uh-huh.
Like you see loaves of bread that are made in parts of Turkey that look exactly like the breads that are made in Italy today, in certain regions of Italy, mostly
yeah.
Rome. You look at in Afghanistan... Afghan bread, because the Roman Empire went as far as India, Western India, actually,
yeah.
went as far as Western India, and I really believe that the tradition of baking bread was transported by the Romans, the use of wheat to bake bread, and this process of, I don't want to say kneading, that actually is more the naivete of our human mind that because it's like this really dumb thing that anyone can do.
But do you think that's
it's
because they wanted to give structure to the bread to
no, I don't think. I think it was just something that it was empirical.
Uh-huh.
If I did this to it, it came out like this.
Uh-huh.
If I did this to it, it came out like that. Claudius, which one do you prefer? You know, which you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I don't think it was an issue of. It couldn't have been. I'm speculating. I have no idea. It couldn't have been. The process and the evolution of the process came about by trial and error, with maybe a little bit of mysticism involved, and also just a little bit of just practice and you could say the development of know-how.
Mm-hmm.
Bakers began to develop tricks. I mean, the Egyptians were already leavening, begun the process. It probably didn't change that much from ancient Egypt to Rome, except in terms of form and format and use. I mean, as far as I know, the Jews in Egypt were the bakers, so it was obviously slave work. it wasn't part of the rejection of in Passover of leavening the bread. Part of that rejection and disdain for an agrarian lifestyle that you also see spattered throughout the Old Testament has to do with the fact that the Egyptians were agrarian and the Jews were basically trying to downplay it.
Sure.
The nomadic life is the good life, being out there in the desert with your...
Shepherding.
Yeah, with your camels and your harem, or whatever. Or shepherding, being a shepherd. And all these, agricultural analogies and stuff end up coming through in religious teachings and all that other stuff. So, to get back to the question of how I came about this process, through all the experiments that I made, I realized that I could make a loaf of bread without kneading. I just didn't realize what, and I discovered that about 12 years ago, 13 years ago in Miami, when I would start kneading dough, and as I was kneading it in my conventional way, it began to fall apart in my hands. So I decided, I'm just going to combine the ingredients together and that's it. And it turned out I could make a perfect loaf of bread without kneading. I didn't understand at that point in time that was probably how the Romans did it. But,
a happy accident.
Yeah, well, a happy accident, exactly. It was just by paying attention to what was going on. All the bread in Florida sucks, universally, because you have these people that are going down there with a very bottom-line mentality that want to make bagels, that want to make pizza, and they know nothing about the craft of baking bread, and they've been educated at cooking schools, unfortunately. Their minds have been closed because they've bought all this nonsense about all this equipment that they have to use. When really, it's the bread makes itself. We're there to kind of manipulate it, handle it, form it, shape it. But the use of the machine is very useful, but it's useful to reduce time. To make more possible.
Well, since we're in this, I guess.
That was a terrible answer to your question.
No, it's good. It's fine. Since we're in this world of trying to figure out what artisan is, do you think there's ever going to be a standardization of what we're baking?
Yeah, I think the more people start baking no-knead bread at home, and the more it's like Close Encounters to the Close Encounters of the First Kind. Remember, everyone was making a skull,
monument,
the Devil's Peak, or whatever. This thing, this vision that they had in their head. If you go online and you look at all the pictures that people have, they're all making the same loaf of bread. Some of them are better than others. Yeah. Some of them are ideal.
Mine wasn't too good. I kind of screwed up in the end, but it tasted good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. But to a certain degree, it comes out that way because of the process.
Uh-huh.
It's because of what you did.
Well, I was thinking conventionally of how I was taught to make bread, and I think, that's a process when you're baking bread.
It's also, you're learning bread from the toilet paper school of thinking, where it's this thing that we can waste and that it's, It's not very flavorful, it has no nutritional value.
Yeah.
Not kneading bread preserves the actual, if there's any pigmentation in your wheat, if you're lucky enough to have estate wheat, as it were, or wheat from one source, you'll actually see a qualitative difference. There would be a terroir, you could say, to your wheat. Unfortunately, with wheat, because it is a commodity and because it's so ancient, I had to fight and struggle with my staff over this new process because they were so wedded to the old process that they just couldn't believe that it was as simple as adding dry ingredients to wet ingredients, and then letting it do its own thing.
And just finishing final...
Just really basically kind of monitoring the progress of the fermenting dough, and then when the dough is a point, or a perfect, when it's ready, when the dough is ready, then you kind of make it into your size, shape, whatever it is.
And what's the reaction been from the community of bakers to
I know some people are very positive and have embraced it, but I think for the most part it's been dismissed. Because it's not, it's this enormous industry, this baking industry.
Yeah.
baking industrial complex. Equipment company is selling artisan mixers and artisan bread ovens, none of which are really artisan if you really think about it.
Yeah.
Not even the mixers and the ovens that I'm using, really. Although, you know, they're just pieces of equipment. The mixer just mixes the ingredients together. In my case, we don't need it. Just kind of incorporates.
So you've incorporated that style into your baking now?
All the breads that we make here are made using a no-knead process.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Okay.
But it's just about...
So you're going by your own book then?
Oh, no, absolutely. I have to.
Yeah.
You know, I want to make the most ideal version of the loaf of bread that people are practicing at home.
Maybe that's why I couldn't make your bread, because I...
But it's the same bread that I've been making my whole life.
Well, because I saw your Martha Stewart appearance, and I said, oh, I got to get that recipe.
But I didn't make those loaves of bread. Her lackeys made them.
Okay, yeah, because I got it.
I want to say her lackeys. No, but her she had a really great staff.
Uh-huh.
Really great staff of people that that made them, and, you know, but I'm a perfectionist, so I look at things, I'm like, that's a big hole in there. You know, most of the, you know, I can actually identify what problems people are having just by looking at all the loaves of bread that I've seen online, it's astounding.
Yeah.
It's astounding.
Well, I try to make that same bread because I got it off her website, and I said, well, I got to do it sourdough. I don't want to put any yeast, commercial yeast, and I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing.
Well,
only because I'm like a sort of a semi-pure snob of sourdough guy, but then I'll be really cheating most of the time and throw a little yeast just to hide my transgression.
Well, no, for stability. Actually,
yeah.
Yeast is very a commercial the commercial yeast is very reliable.
Yeah,
I've
noticed that.
But with
sourdough really is like not that hard to
master.
To use or master. And sometimes you get like the most incredible loaves out of it.
Yeah, just
heard that it's unstable. It's really hard.
Just
and it's like
cut back
it?
The water. That's all.
Yeah,
it's very simple. Because you end up having a different type of ferment, other types of fermentation besides alcoholic. You also have bacterial fermentation,
right.
Proteins.
Well, I would use a very wet levain, like 125 hydration.
A really wet piece of rotten dough.
Yeah, well, now I'm going to a drier piece of rotten dough.
Yeah.
And I seem to find that it's kind of a better rotten piece of dough.
Well, when it's drier, it rots slower. When it's wetter, it rots faster.
Faster, yeah.
So wet is unstable, dry is stable. Mm. That's why Wonder Bread...
But a lot of people like the wet, unstable stuff. And there's one guy in France particularly who I think developed this machine to make this wet stuff.
Of course, and he wants to patent it and market it to all the artisan bread bakeries. But really, he's just another... It's just, of course you can use a liquid dispenser. But you could also just take a stiff starter, let it rot like beyond comprehension, and then throw it in with your water and use an immersion blender.
Uh-huh.
Puree it. Put it in a blender.
Yeah.
Same thing. There you go, liquid starter.
Uh-huh.
And you'll probably have a more reliable liquid starter because you don't need to plunk down $60,000 or $30,000 or whatever he's charging for this fancy
machine,
refrigerator. Yeah. You know.
I've been trying to go into the rye thing because I love German bread. And now I'm on all these German bread forms, and I really love rye bread. And nobody does it here in New York, and it's like because nobody understands.
There's a culture around the product, and you know, in the northern Europe, you have a different bread culture. You know, every country, you know, according to what they could grow, according to, you know, and they developed all these weird forms. But the actual process, is all from it. All originated in Egypt, most likely, and
it's more in line, I think, with what you're talking about. It's a paste, really, more than anything. A lot of their breads,
they're very dense, and they're good, But it's the same process over and over again. So you just can't grow wheat successfully in northern Germany or Poland.
Sure.
So that's why the predominance is of
rye.
Right.
Uh-huh. And your predominantly Italian-style bread that you're making here, are you going to ever go out and try other types or ethnically diverse breads?
Ethnically challenged.
Uh-huh, okay.
And I like that concept of being ethnically challenged. No. I think that, you know, I could just take the same product line I have, cut my oven temperature down by 60 degrees, give everything a French name,
uh-huh.
and then I'm a French baker.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, I think this nonsense of naming breads,
uh-huh.
which is really, I think, nonsense.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm trying to make a pedigree of a ciabatta, according to my standard,
yeah.
certain size, certain weight, certain form, certain technique, certain process, a certain pedigree of the various products that we make, the Filoni, the Pugliese, blah, 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 blah. But is it a true pane pugliese? No, the only true pane pugliese was made in Puglia, but probably even many, many years ago. But anything could be called a pugliese,
mm-hmm.
you know. I've seen many breads called pane pugliese that don't resemble anything that we're making here.
Right.
But I think that, you know, I think that someone has to start trying to standardize in order for the industry to change a little bit. And really, it's about the process. So going back to another thing, you know, bread has no shelf life. Wine has shelf life. There are no wineries of note that make 30 different types of wine using 30 different processes, 20 different types of starters. The yeast is on the outside of the berry.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, we're kind of in this. So we love our old forms, and you know, despite industrialization and the arrival of all this equipment and gadgetry, some of these bread forms survive. So in countries where you have a very deeply rooted bread culture, France and Italy and Germany, you have all these really unusual and unique artisan, quote-unquote, crafted, handcrafted breads with a story behind them. A lot of countries like Spain, Portugal, I think, ended up suffering a little bit more and lost a lot of their baking traditions. Perhaps because of war. I know that Italy was very active after the Second World War in certain regions to try to bring back the bread baking traditions that they had lost. I'm not sure whether Spain, after the Civil War, recuperated. And then, but I know that in Italy they had schools. If an elder craftsman survived, he would train all the kids.
Yeah.
So in towns like, one of the towns I went to, Genzano, which is just outside of, in the Castelli Romani, outside of Rome, they have this incredible ancient tradition preserved there of, you know, using wood-fired ovens, and it's all been passed down, you know, orally. No books.
Yeah.
You know. They have tons of books. It's Italy. You know, they
yeah.
have books for everything. But, and most of the bakers are pretty knowledgeable about what they're doing. But we don't have that here. We're kind of directionless. It's really more about marketing.
It's sort of a bastardized tradition here. That
well, I think we're also discovering. We'll discover. Look, there's. I you can make all sorts of fun breads using the no-knead method. I made the other day a sprouted bread using mung beans that I sprouted, and whole wheat flour and whole, you know, different whole grains. So you can do all sorts of different things with it. It's a very flexible process.
Because somebody had once told me, I asked them, I said, do you think bread has a palate like cooking? They said, no, absolutely not. It's really a one kind of dimensional thing. I'm like, really? Do you think that's true?
That bread is
a one dimensional kind of
Yeah, I think thing? That, yeah, I do, actually. Yeah. I don't think it's pretty dumb. It's like caveman-like. I think that most of the people who are in the baking industry are very infantile, for the most part.
So we're over-intellectualizing it, us bloggers, I guess.
No, I don't think the bloggers are over-intellectualizing. I think it's very primal. People want to do it
yeah.
because it feels good.
Yeah.
You know? Just like that. It feels good. I wasn't going to make a comparison. Just certain things that in our life felt good that we've forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people want to get back to that. It's very primal. It's one of the oldest cooking rituals, human cooking rituals. You know, very ritualistic.
Right.
But if you go to the third world, I'm saying the developing world, not the third world, you know, baking is very, you know, the position of a baker is extremely low. For example, I have an employee from Mali, and he knows that in Mali, to be a baker is like the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
There's no dignity. It's the crappiest job. So how do I take, you know, how can you have a self-esteem living here and being a baker, you know? And also look at industry-wide and, you know, how low the self-esteem is of so many people in food making, manufacture, right. Meat processors, butchers, bakers, on that end.
And it's become so idealized through television marketing how we brand everything.
Well, it's artisan bread.
Yeah.
You know, assign a celebrity chef behind artisan baking like Nancy Silverton.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I don't think she really has that much to do with baking bread anymore.
No, she makes pizza now.
Yeah, maybe. If
she's making it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she's a great chef. Yeah. I mean, she's phenomenal. You can't touch Nancy. But you can. I mean, she's the real deal. But she's just a person who cooks.
Yeah.
You know, the industry overall is you know, filled with armies of...
agents.
Of just workers, you know. And, you know, most bakers are shitholes. Most bakery owners that I've met, I wouldn't want to be their friend or hang out with them. I just don't think, you know, I don't know. Then there's that No Need lady who wrote the book No Need to Need, which really has nothing to do with not needing.
Yeah.
There's still needing involved in that book. And then there's, you know, all sorts of folk out there who just, you know, I don't know. It's a very old thing. It's a very ancient thing. It's a very simple thing. It's going to create a lot of. I'm hoping that the objective of it was to just kind of throw out an argument and a really good recipe, a very solid recipe. That was the objective.
At first, I said, you know, I'm so used to doing it one way that I haven't tried it another way.
Yeah, well,
that's what I'm coming around to thinking. Hey, you know, you got to open your head.
You got to open your mind.
Yeah,
look at what's going on. You know, I mean, I usually try it the wrong way first.
Yeah.
Just to see
if it comes out good.
Yeah, or just see what to happy mistakes.
Yeah.
You know. Is that it?
Yeah.
Any other questions?
I don't want to torture you anymore.
No. And I'm terrible. I have to learn. I have this problem. I can't answer a fucking question. For the life of me, you can't ask me a question, and I can't give you an answer in two words, and it sucks.
No, it's good because it gives me more time on my interviews to, you know, edit and.
Oh, okay.
No, but it's good because I like people who can tell stories. So.
No, but yeah. I want to be able to answer questions like.
Right on the spot.
I know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I think the baking industry is going to go through. I hope it goes through. You know, I mean, also I was trying to take like a little jab at the artisan bakers out there. And
Well, I thank you very much, Jim.
It was so nice to meet
you. Thank you.
And at least some of the questions.
Yeah, I didn't. You just had me on a blank. I can't try to read, but I forgot my glasses.
Oh, I like them. Isn't it talented baking you?
Should we do like the Dave Letterman, you know, like the 10 quick questions and answers? What do they call that? I can't remember. Oh, okay.
Well, the idea, my thought was like, look, I get people to learn this way of making bread. The funniest thing that happened when the whole thing, article, was that I would, for 2 weeks straight, I'd have these people come to the bakery to visit me. And they'd come and they'd say, I just wanted to come and thank you. And then they'd walk out. And I said, aren't you going to buy any bread? He goes, no, we're making our own bread. I've been making bread every day since I saw the article. It's unbelievable! And I said, well, are you going to come and buy some bread for me? Like, no.
That could be a problem.
Well, you know, the tide goes out and then it comes back.
Yeah.
They'll burn themselves
and
something. But, there is a time investment. I think what the other issue, too, is like, what's the real value of a really good loaf of bread?
Uh-huh.
And it also, the other thought behind this methodology is, if you can teach people how to make a good loaf of bread, then they're going to be more critical when they go out there and they buy a loaf of bread.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's did we say a dearth? No, a plethora.
Yeah.
Plethora of really bad baked goods. Baked goods that have no self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very
much. Thanks, Jim.
Awful interview.
It's okay.
A great interview.